is specialist, critical and survivalist. Spitting heaven, fire from his lips. Burn the same driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people, we'll turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom, and all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the home page, and catch the live stream at that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to abitumi.com/timeforanawakening. That's abitumi.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there. Or you can download the TuneIn Radio app to any of your devices. TuneIn Radio app is a free app. And in that TuneIn Radio app, just in the search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon. And you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening Media is also there, full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening Media, interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also, check out that Time for an Awakening Marketplace and our partnership with the BB2Me. Always interesting things in the marketplace all the time. Various African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 7:07 here on this Daylight Savings Sunday here on the Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening here. And we got a break today. An open forum on a Sunday, which is usually a guest allotted slot. But it's open forum this Sunday, and the listening audience is the guest. And you can join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Not a Wu-Tang-a. All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening at 7:12 here on this Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia, 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot. How you doing?
How are you, sir?
I'm going fine. I'm doing fine. You know, the Richard Weather Report. It was chilly out there, Elliot. I don't know what y'all talking about. You know.
Yeah, well, you're going to get a break next week. It's supposed to get a little milder.
Yeah, that's good, you know. I can stretch out then a little bit. But, you know, Elliot, you say this is open forum, and I hope all for the Time for Awakening audience is ready to kind of share with other news, events, thoughts, concepts, experiences they have in order for us to develop about where we are at this point in time. But, you know, Elliot, and going out in the cold, one thing I did notice in Philly, they had the Irish parade, and it made me think, you know, if I can have a minute, it made me think about, you know, not, what was that, last week, the week before last, and Cobra Philly had its Reparations Day event.
Mm-hmm.
And the co-chair was mentioning about peoplehood. It made me think about, you know, as Black Philadelphians and as Black people in America, made me think about our peoplehood, you know, like how are we viewing that, at, you know, seeing for some of the people, and, you know, you always mention, I don't get the chance to willingly not to watch the news or listen to the news. I just can't take it. But as we are being inundated, I guess, around the Ukraine, you know, situation, you know, it made me, and thinking about peoplehood, you know, and as far as a people and being repair, something I seen on the post for the Time for Awakening post about the history of the African in America nation within a nation concept, you know, and it made me just make, you know, thinking about peoplehood, nation of the nation. And I believe, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, that's basically what the people of Ukraine, or that nation state, or a group of people, they're asking for there to be able to operate as a nation within a nation. Isn't that somewhat what's going on over there at this point? I mean, you know, I know everybody's making Putin the bad guy, but from the Ukraine, a particular group of, they want to operate as a nation, isn't it? Isn't that true?
Well, it would seem that way. I don't know too much about the political aspirations or what they intend to do, but that's what the spin is. Yeah, put it that way.
Yeah, and I, you know, and I'm just, you know, here we've been asking to operate as a nation, and, you know, it made me, and then thinking about our peoplehood, you know, in Philly, and I don't know if it's in other places, you know, they're looking for a new superintendent. And it made me wonder, like, what is the expectations then, if we were a nation, as it relates to the development of our, you know, you always hear me say that the only natural resource we have, we produce, is our children. And the greatest wealth is in their mind, and, you know, how it's manufactured. And as they're looking for this superintendent, I'm asking, well, what is our expectation for this person, whoever it may be, right? Shouldn't we have a high expectation of who is going to be really like the general manager in Philly? I don't know about other places. And it may sound like a lot, and it may not be a lot, but $3.9 billion seemed like a lot of money. Seems like a lot of money that, and at the same time, I'm willing to, I'm not a betting man, Elliot, but I think I can speak with some sense of authority. If you put a New York Times, which is that paper, in front of the 10th graders, 10th graders, and in Philly, between 52% and 44% of the students that are in public schools are children of African ancestry, right? If you put a newspaper, the New York Times, in front of the 10th graders, which is supposed to be written on the 10th grade level, I'm wondering how many can read it and comprehend. So shouldn't we be making, and education is politics. That's why I'm bringing this up, in the sense of expectation, in the sense of paper peoplehood, in a sense of being a nation within a nation. You would think that you would hear us demanding what's the expectation we expect for anyone who's going to take the top leadership job, recognizing the condition that we are, our children, we are in, and therefore our future is in, when we look at ourselves from a national perspective. And, you know, just say if this guy is in for 10 years, this guy, lady, whoever is in for 10 years, if they went, took their child as in K-2, they call kindergarten, through the 10th, 12th grade, what should we expect them? Shouldn't we expect at least 99% of them coming out where they can be able to read at the 10th grade level and have the critical thinking skills to comprehend? I mean, am I too far off, Elliot, to have as that as an expectation as a black person in Philadelphia, and I would say black person in America, in relationship to our children, as a citizen of America, and as someone who is concerned about the position of the next generation within this type of society? Am I being too exaggerate? Is that unrealistic to say that as an individual and we as a people should have that expectation on whoever takes the leadership role, or really the city in general? Shouldn't we have that expectation? And I'll leave it there because for some reason it's just bothering me, Elliot, because I don't hear it. But shouldn't we have that expectation as from coming out of our out of these systems, especially as it deals with education?
Well, I mean, you should, but the reality is that it's not that way, and it's not going to be that way unless we do something in reference to our own children. When our people came out of chattel enslavement, we were teaching our own children, and people that could read was volunteering to teach others, whether it was children or adults. It's going to be the same thing now. We can't expect, listen, money comes out of our paychecks and we pay taxes, and we can demand that those things be done. But that demand has to come from your spokespeople, quote unquote, leadership. If that demand is not coming from them, then we have to do something about the people that we have in front of us as leaders. The onus falls on us. We have to do something about this. We can't just sit back and complain about these people because we see what they're doing. I'm going to bring up some articles, you know, just for topic of conversation, of some of these betrayals by these people. So we have to do better. And I'm talking about our people that's concerned about these issues, because these other people, they're not concerned. They play at it. And they use issues to continue in office, to get reelected, to wield so-called power in this society, or to be spokespeople for white folks in the ears of other black people. A lot of them got different reasons why they're doing it, but they don't really have the welfare of our people at heart. It's clear that they don't.
And that's why I see this as, you know, a part of. Just for, you know, example and pushing out for the Time for Awakening, and it's because we're constantly trying to show our responsibility, right? As you said, like, it's our responsibility. I was thinking about, and I was, you know, questioning a friend, you know, like, am I going off? Because when we came after, what's that, after the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, the amount of what I hear and what I've read, and I could be challenged, so, you know, excuse me, let me have the right to be wrong, but please bring in, you know, the factual, you know, more current or factual information if I'm off. The literacy rate, the illiteracy rate in the South amongst our people was very, very, very high. I don't know if people would challenge that. But in a short period of time, they were able to change the literacy rate. That's what I hear sometimes. Recently, the backlash, like it didn't happen in a short period. How is that? And here we are. I mean, we're with more administrative, you know, they didn't have no $3 billion. They were in one room shacks with one teacher. Right. And they were going home to parents and grandparents that newly discovered who did not read or write. And in one generation, the literacy rate was over 80-90%.
But we did that, Richard. We didn't get government help. It was nobody out there giving us money, using tax money to help black people during the period that you're talking about. And even now, but I'm talking about during the period you're talking about. We did that.
Yeah. And that's what I'm comparing it to now, because, I mean, maybe not as frequently now as I've heard maybe 5 years ago when it was always in the media about the, what's that, the school to prison pipeline, right? And in that they were talking about how the tracking of who will go into prison at third grade, they knew which child, and at that point they were saying male, but male and female would end up in the prison system. But here at another, we could say 100 years earlier, four generations before two great migrations north, for those of us in the north, that they were able to move, as you say, by the assistance, the will, the expectations. That's the point I'm trying to make. They had expectations for those young people in relationship to learning to read and write, to think critically. And they did that in less than one generation. And we see the manifestations of that, because it was those people, those children that went through that process, that we also hear about the towns, the companies, the things that they build on their own. And the only thing stopped them, correct me if I'm wrong, Elliot, is white terrorism. If they didn't have white terrorism as a backlash, where would the South be today? How much farmland would be under our control today? Is that something that we should evaluate when we're talking about thinking strategically, when we're talking about peoplehood or being a nation within a nation as a people? And is that the way we should be thinking? Or are we just a colonized people? And I heard you bring it up twice, and I'll stop here. Where we're so dependent on the people who put us in object slavery for more than 200 and something years. They ain't dealing with Jim Crow on and on and on, up to the prison, up to the school to prison pipeline. Right? It's just something doesn't make sense in the now as far as our expectations in relationship to ourselves. And I'm not being negative or overcritical. I'm just looking at the point from repair, peoplehood, and being a nation within a nation, and that our children, regardless, should be our natural, in this capitalist, destructive society, that we're going to be here until we transform it or change it or create something that can be able to defend itself better. We should be able to look at our children in a higher aspiration as value than people look at gold, silver, platinum, and nowadays digital currency. Right? I mean, it just makes sense to me, Elliot. I apologize for going off, but that was my contribution to the Time for Awakening audience, as far as just, you know, being on this freestyle Sunday, which we hope next Sunday, not will be different next Sunday.
We probably after the 8 o'clock hour, Brother Wes Johnson will be joining us from down there in Louisiana, talk show host down there, to talk about some of the issues, current issues that's going on. I got a few things I wanted to throw out, excuse me, in relation to us. Richard, you see where the Congress, and I got a couple of articles here on this Ukraine I want to throw out to get the understanding, go get the slant from our people's view of some of these articles I want to share with them in reference to the Ukraine and black elected officials, put it that way. But Richard, a couple of things I want to just general news I want to share with the listening audience. It can be topic of conversation, or they can call and talk about anything they want by dialing 215-490-9832. The first one, and this, I meant to share these last week, but I didn't get a chance to because we were doing other things. This came from a News One published report. A Tennessee white man accused of rape gets probation. Black woman in the same county got 6 years for registering to vote. His plea deal on aggravated assault allowed him to avoid jail time in the same county that put Pam Moses in prison for 6 years for registering to vote. I'm sorry. In early February, News One reported that 44-year-old Pam Moses was sentenced to 6 years in prison for registering to vote while she was on probation. She didn't think that she was on probation and had an official certificate that backed her assumption that her probation officer had ended. That her probation had ended, I'm sorry. But in Shelby County, Tennessee, that didn't matter. In Shelby County, a black woman was sentenced to 6 years in prison over what ultimately amounted to a clerical error. Also, in that same county, a white man, a former Tennessee sheriff's deputy, was accused of repeatedly raping a 14-year-old girl. That white man in the same county was prosecuted by the same prosecutor's office that sent a black woman to prison for registering to vote. He was granted a plea deal that allowed him to avoid any jail time, and he doesn't even have to register as a sex offender. According to Fox 13 Memphis, a 47-year-old Shelby County Sheriff's Deputy Brian Beck was indicted on two counts of rape by force, coercion, and two counts of sexual battery by an authority figure in 2018. He had been with the sheriff's deputy's office since 2004, but was released of his duties without pay after he was charged. Investigators in the case said the charges stemmed from an incident involving a teenage girl that occurred over 20 months, dating back to May of 2016. On February the 28th of this year, the Shelby County District Attorney accepted a plea deal that allowed Beck to plead guilty to aggravated assault. According to NBC News, court records show the terms of his sentence included supervised probation for 3 years and a suspension of a 4-year prison sentence unless he violates the terms of his probation. Violation of the terms of probation include him getting arrested or having any contact with the teenager that he was accused of raping. Leslie Ballin, Beck's attorney, insisted that Beck had professed his innocence from the start and that he only agreed to a plea deal to avoid a jury trial. The Shelby County Attorney General Amy Weinrich, the same woman who prosecuted Moses, said in a statement Monday, "Given the totality of evidence, we ethically could not proceed to trial to indict on the indicted offenses. The decision was made in consultation with the victim." Weinrich, of course, had a different energy when it came to Moses. As News One previously reported, she argued that Moses somehow tricked the probation officer into not knowing their job and signing off on a certificate declaring that her probation had ended. Weinrich also said of Moses, she refused to file the correct paperwork and fraudulently voted multiple times. Okay, but either way, voting multiple times illegally, especially when Moses didn't realize she couldn't legally vote, is a hell of a lot different than raping a child multiple times. Imagine the prosecutor going this hard on a former cop and putting Moses in prison for 6 years, while also feeling it's okay to let a man accused of the latter avoid any prison time at all. It's almost as if we have two legal systems in America. Now, that's how this person ended the article. I hope she was being facetious when she said it's almost as if we have two legal systems in America. That's clear that it's two legal systems in America. And it's been that way. But I just wanted to share that article because we had reported before that the woman had been put in jail for voting down there in Tennessee. But then this other thing happened with this a former white sheriff's deputy raping somebody and getting probation.
Over and over, these little microaggressions. And I'm calling it micro because it ain't large scale, but it has the same effect, right? Psychologically.
Again, I want to read this article here on some of the black students that's trapped over there in the Ukraine. I'll share that in a minute. Let me share this other article. And this is one of the, and I'm not talking about white folks or other people. I'm dealing with black folks. One of the major distractions for our people not to focus in on issues that really pertain to our well-being here and do something about it is sports. Football, basketball, to a certain degree, baseball. All these sports is a major distraction for black folks. Some of our people talk about this crap like it really means something in their lives. But let me share this, because this is on the heels of that lawsuit that the former coach in Miami put in against that racist NFL. But let me share this, because it just sheds more light on basically what he was talking about, even though this has nothing to do with being a coach. Judge approves fixes to race-norming bias in the NFL, $1 billion concussion deal with players. And you can always read between the lines of these articles about fixes to practice that the NFL was doing. But let me share some of this. Black retired football players who were denied payments for dementia in the NFL's $1 billion concussion settlement can seek to be retested or have their claims looked at again to eliminate racial bias in testing and payout formulas under a revised plan finalized Friday. Outrage over the use of race norming in the dementia testing, which assumed that African-American players had lower cognitive baseline than white players, making it harder for them to show mental declines linked to football, forced the NFL and players' lawyers back to the negotiating table last year. The revisions could allow many retired players to resubmit their claim and add $100 million or more to the NFL's legal tag. The NFL, through the fund, has paid out more than $900 million to date, nearly half for dementia claims. The dementia awards average about $600,000. Thousands of black players stand to benefit from these changes to the settlement, says the lawyer Cyril Smith, a lawyer for former players Najee Davenport and Kevin Henry, whose 2020 race discrimination lawsuit brought this issue to light. More than 3,300 former players or their families have sought awards for brain injuries linked to their playing days. More than 2,000 of them for moderate or advanced dementia. Former NFL players Ken Jenkins, Ken Jenkins, Clarence Vaughn III, carry petitions demanding equal treatment for everyone involved in the settlement of concussion claims against the NFL to the federal courthouse in Philadelphia. The dementia cases have proven the most contentious, and only three claims have been paid to date by African-American players. Another one-third have been denied. The rest remain in limbo. Often the claim goes through several layers of reviews by claims administrators, medical and legal consultants, audit investigators, and judges. In one recent ruling that shows the difficulty families have facing and navigating the claims process, The reviewer bemoaned the long delays experienced by a widow of a former player found after his 2019 death to have advanced CTE, a chronic traumatic brain injury. His medical records show progressive cognitive decline and unrebutted evidence that he suffered CTE at the time of his death. About those diagnoses and submitting medical records do not fit the settlement's described boxes for the claimants qualifying for the diagnosis of dementia, said Hoffman, an expert in contract law at the University of Pennsylvania Law School. The player, an African-American who was 57 when he died, also had his scores normed according to the race norming adjustments of the NFL to account for his race, education, and other factors in keeping with the protocols used at the time by the NFL. According to Hoffman, his claim would not qualify for an award, even if the test was rescored under the new race-blind formula. Former Washington player Charles Mann suspected he might be among the players who was denied claims due to race norming. So we see here, Richard, that this stuff still was continuing, and even though they're supposed to be fixing it, it's still probably going to continue. You got all of these players that have filed suit, black players. I don't know about the whites. It's not talking about whites in this article. All these black players that have filed suit because they done got their brains halfway knocked out, shook, they got dementia, Alzheimer's, and only three claims, according to this article, only three claims have been paid to date. The other one-third have been denied, and the rest remain in limbo. So, you know, we see what's going on. I just want to throw that out there in reference to these, this big distraction that some black folks was caught up in, like it's life or death, this NFL.
And we seen that when they had that whole thing about the brain, you know, with the Nigerian doctor that found out the whole thing of what was happening through the concussion and how much the NFL denied it up to the last minute. Yeah. So we, you know, more of the same.
A couple of articles I want to share in reference to the Ukraine. First, I want to play this clip. And we always talk about the media, especially this white media, and the subliminal, covert, and sometimes overt messages that they want to send to other black people. I want to play this clip here. It was a Detroit, I think he's a Detroit pastor, if I'm not mistaken, and his desire to go and fight for the Ukraine. Let me play this for our listening audience that might, may or may not be aware. I'll share it with you if I can open this thing. Here it is.
A 62-year-old Detroit man is preparing to travel to Ukraine to fight. Victor Williams spoke to him today. Victor.
Yes, he does have some ties, but he wants everyone to know that he is not a warmonger. He's just going to help the people that really need it right now.
All of Ukraine is a war zone, so to speak. So I'm going there to kind of help the Ukrainians defend their homeland.
Detroiter Dr. M. Dijon Johnson says in just a few days he'll be on the front lines fighting the war against Russia. So far, he's already ordered a Kevlar helmet
and flak jacket and all the other necessities.
This Wednesday, the 62-year-old will be flying to Amsterdam and then to Poland. From there, he plans to travel to Ukraine and immediately join the battle.
I get real-time information from Ukraine, from my contacts there, and they're really, really suffering.
These small acts of kindness.
Members prayed for him at Church of the King in downtown Berkeley.
Not perfected things that are imperfect in him, Father. And, Father, we know that he is your child in the name of Jesus. And we thank you for the opportunity that he has to go and to do what you call him to in Jesus' name.
Dr. Johnson has a military background serving with the Army. He also already spent 2 years in Ukraine working at a university.
My job from 2018 to 2020 was to train university professors and graduate students on bringing transparency and democracy to the classroom. Who would have figured I would be putting that into practice? I don't plan on coming back with a red, white, and blue or blue and yellow flag over a box. So I'm coming right back here in Detroit and hopefully make Detroit better like we all do.
And we certainly hope that that's the case. As you can imagine, Dr. Johnson's family is totally against this. Victor Williams.
Richard. I mean, I don't know what to say, but they make sure that they find these people, and this stuff is plastered all over the national media. They want to send messages to other black folks in reference to his feelings. They're not putting him up there to embarrass him. Believe me, they're not. I mean, evidently his family is embarrassed of him. They don't agree. According to the reporter that reported the story, his family is totally against what he's doing. Now, he's going over there. He's in Detroit. And he sees a need to go over there and fight for some Europeans. If anything, get out in the street. Help the people in Detroit.
Right.
There's plenty of stuff going on in the neighborhoods there. It's just like any inner city across this country. Detroit ain't no different than Philadelphia, Baltimore, Chicago. You need to go to the Ukraine. Are you kidding?
He gonna get a helmet.
He gonna get a helmet and a flag jacket.
Negro, I can bring. Look, I ain't got no money, but I'll pay for your flag. You can come over here. You want to go to war with somebody? I'm sorry,
man.
That's too loud.
And then he's in his church, and they're praying for him.
He's 62 years old. What the hell is he think he gonna do? Like, he been in a school, a university. He got contacts, though. He got contacts.
Now, Richard, earlier this week, the Congress, including the members of the CBC, voted to give Ukraine $14 billion in aid. Most of it is weapons and things of that nature, and a huge portion of it is to go to help refugees. Let me share a couple of these articles here from different publications, published reports. This one from Al Jazeera. Hundreds of students trapped in Ukraine's Sumy, and I think that city is pronounced Sumy, S-U-M-I, amid shelling. It says at least 1,700 foreign students are trapped in the northeastern Ukrainian city of Sumy as shelling from Russian armies continued for the 10th day after humanitarian corridors failed to materialize. Shevanki Shubi, and I know I'm butchering that name, a 25-year-old medical student from India, was woken up in her university hostel at dawn on Saturday by loud explosions. My day started with the sound of missiles or bombs at 5 a.m. Then we heard fighting in the streets, gunshots. We were all running towards the bunkers, panicking. And then again around 10 a.m., we heard a bomb. We are all scared and mentally exhausted, she said, adding that there are about 700 Indian students stranded in the city. So far, students have been relying on hostels, supplies of food, as well as university stocks, but water has been cut in the city, forcing them to melt snow to drink or to cook with. Sumy lies about 30 miles from the border with Russia. It was one of the first cities to be attacked by Russian forces after an invasion of Ukraine on February 24th. We are demoralized. Everybody wants to go home, says Precious Ugongpwe, a 21-year-old medical student from Nigeria, told Al Jazeera. We keep asking for help, but nothing, we keep asking for help, but it's not coming at all, she says. About 400 Nigerian students are currently in Sumy, the second largest group of foreign students, next to Indians. Other students include Ghanaian, Rwandan, Palestinian, and Jordanians. Like many others, Ogunpwe tried to flee the city, but taxis and bus drivers charged students $400 when they was when they were still circulating. You would be lucky to find a driver that knows the way and is willing to risk his life, Ogunkwe says, adding that someone tried to escape in their own cars, but was shot at and returned to Sumi. So we see here, Richard, that these students, black students, are still trapped in a lot of those areas. And we've seen what happened from some of the private social media videos that they sent out when they tried to board trains, thrown off trains, women thrown off trains to let white folks on, and the white folks were dogs. The dogs got on when the blacks didn't get on. So we see some of the things that have been going on. Now, in certain African countries here, Nigeria and some of the other ones that make up a lot of the students, that they're the second largest group of foreign students. Ghanaians, Rwandans are among some of the students here. Now, Senegal, according to a published report in an African newspaper, have recalled the ambassador. Recalled their ambassador because of illegal recruitments put out among Senegalese in the nation of Senegal. According to this report, Senegal's foreign minister has summoned their ambassador to Ukraine in response to his calls to recruit Senegalese to fight in Ukraine against Russia. According to the ministry, the Ukrainian ambassador in Senegal published some posts on social media urging Senegalese volunteers and other foreign nationals in Senegal to join the war against Russia. Recruitments of volunteers, mercenaries, and other foreign fighters is illegal in Senegal and punishable by law. The Senegalese ministry also says such actions constitute a flagrant violation of the Vienna Convention of Diplomatic Relations. The social media posts have since been removed, but still remain unclear if additional actions will be taken. Senegal is one of the 17 African countries that abstain the United Nations General Assembly vote on a draft resolution calling on Moscow to immediately withdraw its forces. The resolution was passed on Wednesday at the end of a rare emergency session of the General Assembly called by the Security Council. So Senegal, according to this published report, was one of the 17 African nations that didn't vote, that abstained from voting in about this. The United States keeps talking about the world is against what's going on. But several African nations, one didn't vote. Several didn't even come in the room. And several was there to abstain. Algeria, Mali, Senegal, Angola, Namibia, South Africa, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, Madagascar, the Sudan, Chad didn't vote. They abstained. Ethiopia, Morocco, Sierra Leone, and I can't make out this other one, was not even in the room. They didn't even cast their vote. And Eritrea flat out said no, voted against it. So you've got several African countries, but some of the ones that voted for it, it's clear that their governments are being directed by the United States, if you look at some of the ones that voted for it. And it's kind of surprisingly that Somalia voted in favor of that declaration, and they're the ones being bombed right now by the United States. It's bombing going on in Somalia. Yeah. Now,
I'm glad that you bring up this challenge, and it would require later on some more discussion in relationship to how these African nations, say with even AFRICOM, is dealing with not supporting the U.S. all outright.
It's going to be interesting moving forward, exactly what happens. And you still had those students trapped in those areas. Now, let me share this. This is the last two, and we'll be taking a break, and then we've got some callers on the line. And most likely Brother Wes will be joining us after the 8 o'clock hour. Gregory Meeks, who is the head of the Foreign Relations Committee, he's the chair, Richard, went to Ukraine the other day. Now, let me read. Now, I want you to, the listening audience, to listen clearly to the report given. And this was in the Amsterdam News up there in New York. A report given about his activities once he was there and some of his comments. I want to share this with you. Amsterdam News, and it was dated Wednesday of this week. Meeks leads a group to Ukraine border, according to the Amsterdam News. Heartbreak is the word Queens Congressman Gregory Meeks used to describe what he saw during a bipartisan delegation he led to the border of Poland and Ukraine. Meeks, who is the chair of the House Foreign Relations Affairs Committee, made the trip to assess the needs at the border, which has received the largest influx of refugees fleeing Ukraine. Meeks was joined by Representatives Michael McCaul of Texas, ranking member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Gerald E. Colony, Democrat from Virginia, Ann Wagner, Republican from Missouri, David Silasline from Rhode Island, Brian Fitzpatrick from Pennsylvania, and Susan Wild from Pennsylvania. Two of those folks, Richard, that Fitzpatrick, who is from here, and the other guy from Texas, they're Trump supporters. That's like a major enemy of black folks, although all of these people should be major enemies. But they are Trump supporters. In fact, that guy down there in Texas voted against those laws down there to keep black people from voting. Mm. So these are part of his delegation. It says, during the three-day trip last weekend, the delegation met with U.S. Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, U.S. Poland Ambassador Mark Brzezinski, national and local Polish officials, the U.S. AIDS Disaster Assistance Response Team, and the Ukrainian civil society activists. The delegation also received briefings from the U.S. Army 82nd Airborne Division and met with U.S. service members. This is Meek's second trip to Eastern Europe this year. Prior to the attack, he led a congressional delegation to the Ukraine in February. Earlier this month, the House voted to pass a bill supporting the people of Ukraine, introduced by Meeks and Victoria Spartz, Republican from Indiana, who is Ukrainian born. So he sponsors a bill in support of Ukrainian people, Meeks, and this other person of Ukrainian descent that's an elected official. Keep that in mind. Keep your scorecards, people, on these. You got to keep your scorecards on these people so you know exactly what they're doing. And this is Meeks' comments that he made. In this dark time, the United States have helped usher unprecedented amounts of assistance from the United States, Europe, our allies and partners around the world, from North America to the Indo-Pacific, to aid Ukraine in defense of its nation, Meeks said on the House floor ahead of the vote. I believe we must sustain that assistance for as long as Ukrainians fight for a democratic future. In an interview, now, you hear what he said, Richard. It says, in an interview with Amsterdam News, Meeks describes scenes of mostly women, older men, children streaming to the Polish border in the cold, with a few of their belongings, trying to escape terror they left behind in the Ukraine. Men 18 to 60 and women in medical backgrounds were required to stay and support the fight and not allowed to cross the border. Meek said, the individuals that we were coming across now seem to have some friends or family members that live in Poland. Amsterdam News reported about the racism that many African immigrants in the Ukraine is facing while trying to flee the country. Africans at train stations were prevented from getting aboard trains and being told that they would have to walk to Poland. The government of Poland put out a non-discriminatory policy for individuals crossing the border, says Meeks. They are trying to get some other folks in there to prevent these others that were preventing folks from getting on the trains and stopping that and stop that from happening. We got a bill coming up that we'll be voting on as far as more dollars is concerned for the purchase of weapons that we can send, Meeks says. Meeks also says that both sides agreed that Ukraine should be a political issue and come together with one voice. We're looking at the picture and listening to what's going on and talking with the possible, talking with students that face possible discriminations crossing the border, but also the horrific killing of innocent lives by the hands of evil Putin. I couldn't sleep last night. As chair of the committee, I am responsible to go see for myself what's going on. I went with other ranking members of my committee, Mike McCall, and others wanted to go to Poland, and I wanted it to completely be bipartisan. And I wanted to make sure that we would have no disagreements, that we would be in one message, and we would be not playing politics and be both sides together. As for the future, Meek says, both parties handled Ukraine situation could lead to more bipartisan efforts. Now, Richard, two things that he stated here, because he spent a lot of time talking about his efforts to help Ukrainians. Now, according to the Amsterdam News, two things he mentioned about the students. And let me read it again so you can hear his words according to the Amsterdam News. It says the Amsterdam News had reported about the racism that many African immigrants in the Ukraine were facing trying to flee the country. Africans at train stations were prevented from getting on board trains and being told that they had to walk to Poland. Now, this was Amsterdam News reporter speaking to Meeks. This is Meeks' response. The government of Poland put out a non-discriminatory policy for individuals crossing the border, Meeks says. We're trying to get some other folks in there to prevent these others that are preventing folks from getting on a train to stop. And to stop them and to stop that from happening. Now, wait a minute. That's your answer for what's going on over there? That the government said that they put out a non-discriminatory policy that anybody should be able to get on trains, but it's clear that they're not. So he's going to make sure that he sent people in there to stop that from happening. I mean, that's his answer to people that look like him, whether they be on the continent or here in the diaspora. That's your answer. Then in the other thing he mentioned, because he addressed it twice in here, he said, I was looking at pictures and listening to what was going on and talking about the possible discrimination of Africans crossing the border, the possible discrimination. The possible discrimination. Richard, that's the leadership that blacks have voted for. You hear it out of their own mouths, what they're doing. Voting on legislation to support other people. Turning a blind eye to what's going on to people that look like them. Now, before we go to break, let me share this article. And this was in the Jacobin magazine. in January. But it's interesting, and I'll share this with the listening audience before we go to break. The published report from 1/15 of this year, 22. The CIA may be breeding terror in the Ukraine. The CIA has been secretly training anti-Russian groups in the Ukraine since 2015. Everything we know points to the likelihood that include neo-Nazi far-right terrorists across the world. The U.S. government has a well-documented history of backing extremist groups as part of a foreign relations policy, as part of their foreign relations policy misadventures, which inevitably end up blowing up in America's public's faces. In the 1960s, the CIA worked with Cuban anti-Fidel Castro radicals who turned Miami into a hub of terrorist violence. In the 1980s, the agency supported and encouraged Islamic radicals convening in Afghanistan, who would go on to orchestrate the September 11th attacks. And in 2010, the Washington-backed Syria's not-so-moderate rebels, who ended up cutting a swath of atrocities through civilian and Kurdish forces that were meant to be U.S. allies. Based on a new report, it looks like we may soon be able to add another to the list of fatal unlearned lessons, Ukrainians. Given the facts, there's a good chance that the CIA is training actual, literal white supremacists as part of this effort. The year the program started in 2015 also happened to be the same year that Congress passed a spending bill that featured hundreds of millions of dollars worth of economic and military support for Ukraine, one that was expressly modified to allow that support to flow to the country's resident militia, the Azov Regiment. That's AZOV, Azov. I guess that's how you pronounce it, regiment. According to the Nation at the time, the text of the bill passed in the middle of the year that featured an amendment explicitly barring arms, training, and other assistance to Azov. But the House committee in charge of the bill had pressured the Pentagon months later to remove the language, falsely telling them that it was redundant. Despite sometimes open acknowledgement of its white supremacy, its former commander once said that the historic mission of Ukraine is to lead the white race of the world into a final crusade for their survival. Azov was incorporated into the country's National Guard in 2014, owing its effectiveness in fighting Russian separatists. U.S. arms have flowed to the militia. NATO and U.S. military officials have been pictured meeting with them, and members of the militia have talked about their work with U.S. trainers and the lack of background screenings to weed out white supremacists. A number of prominent individuals, far-right extremist groups in the United States and Europe have actively sought out relationships with representatives of the far-right in the Ukraine, specifically the National Corps and its associated militia, the Azov Regiment. It states in a 2020 report from the West Point U.S. Military Academy's Combating Terrorism Center that the U.S.-based individuals have spoken or written about how the training available in the Ukraine might assist them and others in paramilitary-style activities at home. The 2018 FBI affidavit asserted that Azov is believed to have participated in training and radicalizing United States-based white supremacy organizations, including members of white supremacists Rise Above Movement, and others. So, Richard, you see that this type of stuff is going on. Your dollars, black people's dollars, is being sent over there to supply these same people that have been training white supremacists around the world. And you got blacks that's supposed to be in leadership. Gregory Meeks, the head of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Linda Thomas Greenfield, the ambassador to the United Nations. Lloyd Austin, the Secretary of Defense. And Kamala Harris, who used to be part of the Select Committee on Intelligence. You mean to tell me none of these people knew or know that these people over there was part of a large supremacist regiment that had been training white supremacists in Europe and the United States, and money has gone to them because they're good fighters and they can use them to fight against Russians? They don't know this.
Hey, Elliot, don't start me down that line because you.
Wait a minute. Your elected officials have, and when I'm saying your elected officials, I'm saying that facetiously, have told you that we support the Ukraine. We're together with them. You see these people. Now you see why when black folks appeared at those train stations, they were thrown out of there. I don't know whether they speak Ukrainian, but I guess they call them all types of N-words. If they speak Ukrainian, they may speak a broken form of English. I don't know what they speak. They got some type of Slavic tongue. We went over that a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
They are related. According to Meeks, he said a lot of the people there was going to Poland, and they seem to have relations or family there.
Yeah,
it's obvious they have relations or family there. They're all one people. They're just mm-hmm. cousins. But evidently, he don't know these things. He need to pick up a history book and use a little historical perspective when he's talking about those people, and he wouldn't sound so stupid.
And as you're saying, as you're inferring and directly stating, but we as African, when you say that they not only train those white, those supremacists in the Ukraine, but here in the United States, when you say that they are selected by the United States military government, because of their ability. So whether the Negroes was involved or not, the way I see it, this is still some of that North-South stuff in the government.
Well, certainly it is.
Right? And that's globalized and financed as before. But do we have, which would make us be concerned about those politics, do we have that information and making our political decisions in relationship to who we're choosing based off of that understanding? That this government is doing the same thing it's always doing as it relates to black folks.
Wow, we're going to take a brief break. When we come back, you can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832, and we're going to add to the conversation one of our elders, man, we're proud to have a relationship with, talk show down in New Orleans. He's going to get involved in the conversation, Brother Wes Johnson. We're going to be right back, and you can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. You know what? I don't even have the commercial cue. So, you know what we're going to do? This is what we'll do. We'll take a call. And while I'm getting this together, and then we can we'll go to break after that. Let's go to 404 in Atlanta. 404.
Yes, sir. Yahuru, my lord. Hey, look here, man. Yeah, you good subject tonight. Before I get to Ukraine, man, I know Najee Davenport, man. He grew up in the same neighborhood, man. Matter of fact, he lived right around the corner from where I used to live, man. Okay. And he used to watch us playing ball. See, our neighborhood, the one that put South Florida on the map, I'm the same neighborhood where Michael Irvin from, man. Okay? So Najee Davenport, I kind of like raised him, man, from a little boy, man. I love that brother, man. He turned out right just the way I thought he was going to turn out, man. So I love that brother, man. But anyway, he's doing the right thing, man.
You know, if according to this published report, it wasn't for him, they'd be still doing business as usual. And they're probably going to try to still do business as usual. But he's the one that put this lawsuit in against that NFL.
Yes, sir, man. That's one of my students. I raised that boy. I mean, he was little, man. He little boy watching us play ball, man. I know that boy. He raised up just right. I told you, man, I'm from soldiers, man. But getting to the Ukraine, man. Okay, I sent y'all something about my man, Pastor Gator, that broke down Ukraine, Russia, the Rothschilds, and the conspiracy to get rid of Putin, man. He laid that thing out beautiful, man. Better than I could do it, man. Because he named names, get details. He go all the way back from the damn beginning of time. Because look at here. See, the first president of Russia, y'all, I know y'all heard of Alexander Pushkin. He was the one, black dude, started the doggone Russian Federation, man. He the one that started their war tactics in Russia, man. And see, hey, bro, that dude that you just talked about from the joint, I saw what you posted on Facebook, man. When I saw that, bro, I couldn't even read that, man. Because he reminded me of these stupid niggas. Remember a couple of years ago, you had a jackass in South Carolina walking around with a Confederate flag, a Confederate uniform. Remember that? Yeah, man. And he could see, man, the way that the Ukraine is doing our African brothers and sisters. Bro, you just read the tip of the iceberg, man. They beating up them brothers and sisters. One sister was crying, man. They beating them up. One dude, they beat him up so bad when he got to the Poland border, the Polish folk had to take him to the hospital, man. And that tell you right there, them dudes is Nazis, man. That's where the Khazarians started from. Them damn fake Jews, that's where they started from, man. That's Khazaria. Okay? Them Nazis, man. And for that stupid Negro to go over there, he probably ain't going to end up fighting them. I hope they beat his ass, the damn Ukrainian people. I hope they give some do better medicine and send him back home. But, you see, bro, that's why anything these white boys hate, that's the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So the minute they show somebody that they hate, bro, I know that's a hero. Look how they did the Minister Farrakhan, how much they try to hate him. Okay, so right then and there, that made me love the minister, man. And for these Negroes, they keep pushing out in front like that. I meant to tell y'all about that Oreo lady down there from Miami, man. That's your Oreo. Talking about she's going to be Supreme Court Justice. Whoever they pick up and pull up, that's going to be the damn Oreo, man. Every time, man. That's the algorithm. I study the algorithm, man. And I don't want to cuss no more, man, but this is a damn shame, man. For these Negroes that love them folk like old Meek guy, man. He got the right name, old Meek Negro, 65 Negro, man. I'm sick of them, bro. I'm like my man Lil Joe Cartwright, man. I'm tired of them, bro. But the way I look at it now, I ain't got time to throw no stones at them because we got stuff to do, all right? Like my man Richard was talking about reading. See, I listen to radio all around the country, man. And that station y'all got, WURD, bro, I found out that the Biden administration was paying media to push them shots, man. So I guarantee any of them Negroes you heard talking about the shot, they done got paid, man. Okay, it's one thing to have a public service announcement, but when they pushing it, they getting paid, bro. And I listen to WURD, my brother Michael Card, man. His show done went off the rail with that sister get on there every weekend. Sound like an angry black woman talking about the same thing. And see, I'm with solution now, man. We know the problem now. It's time to do what we got to do. So if the children can't get there and read, start a class and give out some books, man. Teach them children, them third graders, how to read. Instead of getting on the radio every week, sound like a damn black, angry black woman, all that, wasting that energy with all that woo, 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 woo. Not the time, man. If we see a need, everybody see a need, it's time to jump in there, man. Okay, the time for analysis of paralysis is over now, man. Okay, we know the problem, so we got the solution. And some good things are getting ready to happen. With me and another dude, I had to get him called in last week, but he old dude, 81, Brother Ray, that used to be a driver for Dr. King, man. And he drove Dr. King around. He knew all of them. And he told Dr. King before they went to Selma, if one of them devils spit on him or hit him, he going to lay them hands on him. And so Dr. King told him to stay home. His brother's Brother Ray, 81 years old. I'm going to try to get him to call in, man, but he don't like to be on hold too damn long. He's 81 years old. So, man, I'm trying to get him to call in. And y'all see his number, the 786 number. try to get to him fast, man, because he's old dude, man. He's like me, man. We ain't got no time for the sugar honey iced tea, for the BS no more. We finna make some thing happen, man. But anyway, I love y'all, man. Love y'all, Richard. You got to get on out there, man. You see something? I hate to hear a Negro talking about, we need to. It's a vacuum, fill the damn vacuum. That's why I don't say nothing. I need something, because if I do, I got to jump in the battle, man. So that's why I'm checking my words, man. Anyway, I don't want to take too much time, man. I want to thank my man, New York Jake, because he gave me some compliments the other day on Ocean's show. He surprised me. Almost made my eyes start sweating, man. I was surprised. My eyes up. But anyway, I like to leave a positive note, man. I let somebody talk. I'm going to fade to black, man. Love y'all.
Thanks for your contribution.
Yeah.
We're going to take a brief break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. Again, you can get involved, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
An Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. Abibitumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. Abibitumi.store is here for you. Abibitumi, Black Power, Abibitumi. The only word you need to know to join your global Kometsu Black family, to join your interconnected Kometsu Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation. Thank you.
I am an African. The death of my brother is also my death. Let me put this question to you again, because many foolish black middle classes and many foolish people who are eating well think that they can sit in America and watch this country destroy the African continents, and watch this country destroy African Caribbeans, and watch this country destroy Africans in Central and South America, and think that these same people who destroy Africans abroad will not be the same people who destroyed them in America. There are fools in this country who try to claim that they are not Africans, who claim that they do not see color, as if their not seeing color makes any difference in the world. Simply because you don't see color doesn't mean somebody does not see you as color. And that's the issue. And you think then that you can sit in this country while this same nation and these same people that you sleep with and marry and love and so forth can go out and destroy African people and not think those people do not see you as African. Even though you choose not to see yourself as African, you better think again. You're out of your minds and you're headed for death. You must understand that. Hide behind it. I am an American. Ladies and gentlemen, these death and destruction of black people will follow those kind of abstractions.
Probably the next 5 or 10 years will indicate whether or not the black man can survive. Our struggle for survival is a very real struggle, and the white man has prepared genocide for black people. Unemployment, the black man is no longer necessary. Unemployment is going to be a way of life for black people. We are going to face increasing dangers and problems as the days pass, and we're totally unequipped as black people to deal with them. We're a part of a slave culture. We have no preparation. We have no black institutions capable of dealing with white racist institutions designed to serve only white people. We must deal with the problem that confronts black people by building black institutions, by understanding that only a separatist position is a viable position for black people. Any organization or any leader in America who today advocates integration is a foe and an enemy of black people and their survival in the coming years.
In this crooked game of power politics here in America, the Negro, namely the race problem, integration, civil rights issue, are all nothing but tools used by the whites who call themselves liberals against another group of whites who call themselves conservatives, either to get into power or to retain power. Among whites here in America, the political teams are no longer divided into Democrats and Republicans. The whites who are now struggling for control of the American political throne are divided into liberal and conservative camps. The white liberals from both parties cross party lines to work together toward the same goal. And white conservatives from both parties do likewise. The white liberal differs from the white conservative only in one way. The liberal is more deceitful, more hypocritical than the conservative. Both want power, but the white liberal is the one who has perfected the art of posing as the Negro's friend and benefactor. And by winning the friendship and support of the Negro, the white liberal is able to use the Negro as a pawn or a weapon in this political football game that is constantly raging between the white liberals and the white conservatives. The American Negro is nothing but a political football.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network for podcasting. or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:28 here in the city of Philadelphia on the Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. We're in an open forum this evening. Anything that's on your mind, you can give us a call. Myself and Brother Richard just threw out a couple issues and topics, but it's open forum, so you can talk about whatever you want, and you can do that by dialing 215-490-9832. Right now, we got a brother joining us that's been on the program several times before. Talk show host out of the great city of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Brother Wes Johnson is with us. Brother Wes.
Greetings. How are you, my brother?
Hey, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing great. And it's New Orleans.
I'm talking about Baton Rouge. Oh, glad to have you with us, sir.
It's always a pleasure.
Brother Wes, you sent me I guess for lack of a better term, editorial. And I know you did it. You talked about it on your program.
Right.
I shared it with Richard. I want you just to come on and talk about some of these issues because they're very important. You know, it's on the minds of our people. The television has got them talking about it. But, you know, it's different ways that they're talking about it. Some people are talking about it one way. Other folks that are in positions of power are talking about it in a different way. Share with the audience some of the ways that you see it, Brother Wes.
I'd be happy to, and thank you for the opportunity, my brother. First of all, let me say this. The commentary that I sent out was to strike a blow at what we as the so-called conscious community continues to allow to happen, not only to us, but to our brothers and sisters around the world. And that is, we know what's going on. We many times can foresee things before they happen. And we have kind of settled in our own particular community, and we basically just communicate within that community. But there's so many things going on that's happening that we need to let the outer community know that we're aware of and that we don't appreciate, and that through acknowledging the fact that we're aware, that we're not only going to discuss it, but we're going to do something about it. Now, the situation with Ukraine, which to me is one of the worst situations that Black people around the world can confront, basically because here we are, using taxpayers' money, which a sizable portion of that comes from Black folks, to protect a country that is committed and dedicated to white supremacy. Mm-hmm. But when they move in a white supremacist manner, I heard really no talk as to the fact that here we are allowing our Black elected officials, allowing those white elected officials that we helped put in office, act as if nothing has happened to our brothers and sisters who are trying to flee Ukraine to safety. And we need to we need to do everything we can to let the outer community know that we know and that this has got to stop. Now, we have Black Lives Matter, we have the NAA and the SCL and all those alphabets that we know are bought and paid for, so they're not going to say anything. But if we put the fire under their feet, and make it as uncomfortable as possible for them to exist in our communities. Eventually, it's going to happen. Eventually, it's going to get through. Now, I had pointed out with some of the good old Negroes on cable news television are saying about this, and they're acting as if they have a welded interest in the people of Ukraine. They act as if what has happened to the people of Ukraine and of Europe should be on the hearts and minds of Black people in America and throughout the African diaspora. And we allow them to get away with it. We've got to raise our voices. We've got to let these folks know that it's not happening. Because as soon as this white supremacist moves on them, they're going to be screaming and hollering for us to come out and do something. And when we do, we're rendering a disservice to ourselves because they don't worry about servicing us when they're in the positions to do what they do. In the commentary, I went back to the fact that Black people struggled, sacrificed. They went through hell to allow those Blacks that were capable and able of getting an education, going into the white environment, and learning, grabbing a hold of whatever they could to come back so that the masses of Black folks would be able to move forward collectively. We're not reminding them of this. They owe a responsibility. They owe a debt to every Black person who was not able to grab a hold of that brass ring and be able to move up this ladder and do for self what they have done and without looking back to do for others. And I just cringe at the fact that this continues day in and day out. So I wrote the article so that I could remind myself and others that we need to stop accepting this and do something about it. I was listening to some of the program, and they were bringing out some very, very critical points that were made. And we have to understand that these critical points that are being made on our media outlets have got to find their way into the mainstream. Because until the mainstream becomes uncomfortable, they'll continue to be able to keep a cloak over it, to hide it, and to act as if it's not happening. And that is a serious problem. And it's people like you and Brother Richard that have your programs that you keep pounding away and pounding away. So those of us that are listening and absorbing, we have to pound away as well. We have to do it on a local basis, and we have to do it on a national as well as an international basis. Because to continue to allow these things to happen to us and we're not doing anything about it, it's time for us to stand and accept the responsibilities that we accepted when we decided to get into the struggle and get into the fight.
Brother West, let me say something, and then I'll pass it over to Richard. In reference to what you just stated about us doing something about this, let's look at, and I'll use the term mass media, white media. They use the media in strategic ways to get messages out, whether overt or subliminal. You mentioned in your commentary about the use of popular black media, although you don't have that much media, black media in the national mainstream, you might have black hosts on programs. You mentioned about some of the black hosts on some of these programs touting the quote-unquote party line.
Right.
As a man that have been out here for quite a while and in media, how would you suggest that we do this? Now, I'll put out my suggestion, and I've talked about it on the program, and myself and Brother Richard, and we've talked about it with other guests that have been on, that we need to work together. In this new form of media that have come along and kind of sprung up over the past 15, 20 years, this mass media, social media, that we need to work together and form a fist instead of fingers. You can. It's more power when you those fingers form a fist. If we work together in this social media, we can be able to get messages to our people in a more cohesive way. Give me some of your suggestions on how we deal with this.
Well, first of all, we today probably have more available outlets than we had when I first started out. We have social media, and we need to be burning up social media. And we burn it up with the fact that we know that there are certain personalities on certain news and programming in various cities. We go after them. We go after the fact that the white-owned media is not servicing our community, and we start making a fuss about that. Then we go and we start approaching these alphabet organizations and start putting the heat under them for not putting the heat under the established media for what they have done and what they're doing and what they're getting away with. We have got to put pressure on everyone from A to Z. We have to start communicating with each other from town to town, city to city, and coast to coast. We have to have communications going out and communications coming in. We have got to start preparing, promoting, and putting together various programs in our community that we can start pulling from people from around the country, having them come in and speak. We've got to go back to the old basics, and that is you come in with an entourage from another place, and they have a problem there. You have the same problem. We're here to talk about it and to help organize and to bring it to the forefront. We used to do that on a regular basis, but I'm not seeing it as much as we did then. We have a lot of young brothers and sisters that are just champing at the bit to get involved. We need to involve them. We have a lot of them that's on the sidelines. We need to start going and recruiting them, put them in places, to put them on alert to do what it is that we've all done over the years, and to start bringing this back up, because white folks have felt like it's over with. They think that they've got this well in hand. So we need to go behind, under, across, through those organizations that keep putting roadblocks in the way, and put pressure on them, no matter where it is. It could be at church. It could be wherever you put pressure on them, because they are not doing the job that they claim they're supposed to be doing. The churches, it's another one. They claim they're doing a job. Well, we need to put them to the test. We need to find out, when was your latest crusade, and what is your latest victory for helping black people obtain the freedom that we've been fighting for for 500 years in this country. We've got to put the fire underneath everything that has a voice, and it'll trickle out. People will start taking note, and other people are going to start asking questions. They're going to start noticing, because we're making it known to everybody that they're falling short, and we need to shore them up so they can get something done.
Richard?
No, Wes, in looking at your pieces, two pieces that I pulled out, I just wanted to expand on. But as you were, based off of what question Elliot raised, you were saying, what we need to do. And I would put them in two buckets. The we who actually see, and that's the bucket I would like you to expand on. Who is this we that already, like yourself, see, been watching, been constantly bringing out the message, and at this point can see that times is different. Who are the we, that we? You really developed, like, who is the other we that's in these churches, which goes to the other question. But who do you see now? Because I think it requires that we do something amongst ourselves to be able to be more effective in order to communicate to this other group. But can you help elaborate that if I'm coming across clear in the question I'm asking?
Yes, you are. The we happens to be the people that tune in to you every week. And tune into all of the Black programs throughout this country. The we is the one that you see and you hear that are always throwing their fist up, talking about Black power. Okay, then let's see and matriculate what Black power actually is. And we need to start conversing, communicating, and organizing together to move on the things that we keep complaining about and talking about as we're growing and learning about what it is that has happened in our history, what it is that has happened to our people. What do we need to do? Because everyone has some thought about what could happen and what could be done. So let's find out what it is, and let's see how we can make that a part of the agenda that we continually talk about.
And I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I know there are Elliot brings up all the time the independent Black political formations that are occurring, in the state of the state of Delaware, or in the South, even what's going to happen in Newark in relationship to just celebrating the 17th Gary Convention, that these are the formations that we can be a part of to be able to help to do what you said. There was something in your commentary that you wrote that, and you spoke to it, but it's just something that we, in this part, because, Black leadership in these organizations, somebody is putting them in there. And the question is whether they represent how much of the Black community they represent. But you said this should have signaled the collusion between the Black leadership of America and the white racist control of the political parties. And when Elliot read the article that showed about the government financing white terrorist groups that are training people in the UK and training people here in the South, in America, and being selected because of their ability. Are you saying that the possible, especially electoral leadership, is in collusion? Not only because the party is supporting that, but because they are aware of it? That the indication to you that they're in collusion? with the party group and with those whites that are
yes,
in the
most definitely yes. And here's the indicators that you follow, that they find themselves being more comfortable in a white setting than they do a black setting. They begin to act like and react to black folks as if they're afraid of them. They find their pleasures away somewhere in a white resort somewhere. I mean, the white supremacists have been at this for so long until they have it down to a science. And if someone from out of left field pops up, is able to gain voice and agency, and people are responding and moving with them, then they come in and they try to buy them off or scare them off. And that has been going on even during the time of slavery. So this is nothing new. What's new is that now we're more acceptant to it, and we act like we don't see and understand it. We're not challenging the people that claim to be our leaders. And how did they become leaders? They were either put in those positions by white supremacists, or they grew up in the ghetto. They were able to make a name for themselves. And then white supremacy comes and snatches them, tell them to continue to do what you're doing. But you got to understand, this is where the big picture is. If you want to get anything done, this is what you have to do. And we see it all the time in politics. We have all of these Negro politicians, or want to be politicians, waiting for their chance to be crowned
yep.
King Negro, so that they can move into the realm, and now they have a position either in the city, the state, or the federal vein.
Mm-hmm.
And I've learned over the years, because I have been challenging them my entire life. And when you challenge them, now they don't want to talk. They want to get away from you. And they have been, they have been allowed to escape. We have to put together our movement so that when we challenge, when one challenge, he goes to the other side of the room, somebody else is going to challenge him over there. We cannot continue to allow them to escape. And I'm going to tell you, we are losing too many soldiers because they have been able to escape. And people, soldiers or potential soldiers, are watching, and when they don't see anything coming up that is going to counter this or is going to put the pressure on them, then they back off. We're not recruiting. I mean, black people in black movements are not recruiting the way we used to recruit. We used to be in the ghetto, and we used to be reaching out and pulling folks with us as we climb. Now, we've taken that philosophy of the white supremacist, and we want to climb singularly. We want to do it by ourselves, and we can't get anything that way.
Wow. to me is, I just came aware, when they were talking about the Madison put that individual, when he put the Bill of Rights, it was to give the individual political power and the individual in relationship to state power. And now, I hear, in colloquial, everybody, to the point that you're making this individualism kind of cultural. But even then, there were those individuals when he was that was built. Those were either manufacturers or land, you know, landowners, or, you know, who had enslaved people. They were talking about them. They wasn't talking about us as being individual. But, you know, so I, you know, and it related to specifically the engagement of political rights. And we're, if I understand you right, that we should be exerting ourselves as political agents collectively and individually in our own self-interest. But I want to ask you my question in the sense of something, another line that you write in your commentary. And it's a psychological, you know, psychological, maybe a psychological profile. And you and Elliot have addressed it. But you said, I do not know if the black politicians are afraid to talk about the pitfalls of the Democratic Party. Is it fear or greed, based off of your experience, that we're looking at with these individuals? Are they truly afraid when they get in there and that's why they toe the line and don't say anything? Or is it because their individual greed of what they can get for themselves is the reason why they toe the line as they get in there, in spite of the black they're supposed to represent?
Yeah, it's both. It's fear that white folks will let them go, will divorce them, will not allow them to remain a member of their exclusive club. And it's greed, because if they're let go, then they cannot go to the country club. They cannot pick up the telephone and call a press conference. So it's both. And they understand, you know, it's basically a manner when I was really young, we called it selling out. So what we're seeing today are the remnants of a lineage of sellouts who are now in positions of power. And we've got to do something to turn that table. And I'm going to tell you, we talk about the churches. Churches has let us down tremendously. And we have got to work on educating our people as to why they have let us down, and also educating our people as to what the structure of the church actually is and what it is doing to our people. Because I talk a lot about the fact that we are living today under white rule, but we don't know anything about black rule. And before there was white rule, there was black rule. Black rule was first. But we know very little, if anything at all, about that. And we need to learn and embrace it, because if we're going to survive as a people, we have got to understand that at some point we're going to have to be the ones who regain black rule.
Let's go to a couple calls here and see if they want to share with our guest, Brother Wes Johnson from.
Sure.
Okay, let's go to 267. 267? 267, are you there? Let's put them back on hold. Let's go to 505. 505?
Yes, sir. How are you this evening?
Great.
I'm sorry. I just turned on because I got the time mixed up with the daylight saving time, so I just turned you all on, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I'll put you on hold, and you can kind of pick it up.
Thank you, my brother.
All right. Let's go to 215. 215. 215. 215, are you there? He must have stepped away. Let's go to Ohio. Ohio, it's Sean. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah.
Question or comment for Or just you want to throw something out there? Go ahead. The floor is yours.
No, I have no comment. I'm just listening.
Okay. Brother West, the we see in media, because you address media. Let's go back to the political formations, because organization is the key to anything that we're doing, whether you're talking about political formations or whether you're talking about getting messages out, the proper messages to our people, whether you're talking about challenging people that's supposed to be in power or supposed to be watchdogs or guardians for our people. Either way, you got to have an organized effort, so it takes organization. Talk about, in your estimation, qualities that are necessary to be a good organizer. You know, we look at our historical experience here in this country, and we see individuals, and sometimes the organizer wasn't necessarily the guy in the forefront, but then we do see other men that were great organizers, and they end up being thrust into the forefront. In your estimation, and being in the South and doing things, and talk about qualities that you see that is necessary to be a good organizer.
Well, it has been traditionally the better organizers are those that are the neediest, those that are struggling to survive. They learn quickly how to organize for survival. And the majority of our leadership is being looked over because, first of all, they haven't been spoon-fed by white supremacy, and they tend to be a threat to white supremacy. So we don't recruit and we don't nourish the leadership that we really need, and that's the sad part about it. I hesitate to get into this because I don't want to go down this road today because of the time and because it takes a lot of explaining to understand.
Okay.
But our biggest problem are our fraternal institutions.
Mm.
And that is why black people are where they are today. Because fraternal institutions are nothing more than the pets of white supremacy. And until they acknowledge that, we're going to be in this gap situation during the struggle.
Well, you know, that's something similar to what W.E.B. Du Bois said in 1948.
Yeah.
Let's go to 267.
Hey, good evening, Elliot Richard. And I want to say good evening to my brother, Brother West. How are you tonight?
Doing fine, my brother. How are you?
I'm fine, man. And you said it right what I wanted to say. Because we're looking for solutions to the problem, and that's one of them. You cannot be a brother by an unbreakable chain to Albert Pike. There's no way possible.
Exactly.
And call yourself a leader. You know what I mean? So, no, and those out there that know what I'm talking about, they know what I'm talking about. There's no way we can say, well, we got to give Kamala Harris a pass because she's our Soros sister. You know, I mean that childish garbage has to end. And you know, we're talking about solutions, brother West. And I like what you and Richard were talking about, the we, because I listened to a program yesterday out of Washington D.C. and I was ready to call in and blow my top off, but I left it alone. because they were talking about we have no business over there in the Ukraine doing this, and we have, you know, we have bases all around. I wanted to call up those jokers, a Black Talk Radio. I wanted to call them jokers up and say, where your base at? Tell me, what's the name of your base? Because it kept saying we.
We, okay.
We, and that pisses me off because it's not we. You know what I mean? Don't even include me in your madness. But, you know, we were talking about grassroots groups, and I've been involved with so many of them, man. And the thing that tears up our grassroots groups is that brothers being connected to Albert Pike by that unbreakable chain. That's one of them. Ego, arrogance, and just religion. That's another one. I mean, we can go on and see the reason why a lot of grassroots. Now, the one grassroots group that I met you in, it had potential, but it fell from the top down because exactly of what I'm saying right now tonight. You know what I mean? You can't say I pledge allegiance to the flag and then come and say you want to do something different. And if we really want to show these people, if we really want to show them that we're serious and we're not a joke, because we, you know, I can't say we because I haven't done this in a while. I mean, I haven't done it since I saw through Bill Clinton and what he was perpetrating. And I said, oh, both parties playing us. And then I heard Brother Malcolm X said their wings are the same dirty, filthy bird. So if I'm politically connected to one of these parties, there's no, you might as well throw in a towel because you're a joke. And we got to show I'm talking about the listeners of this station and those of us who know and have some understanding. We cannot go out there and pull the lever for this Democratic Party because they do not represent us. They will represent a person over their sexuality more than they would us as descendants of ex-slaves, and I can't even use that in a proper term because we're descendants of ex-kings that were enslaved. So, you know, there's some things that I myself had to come to grips with before I got the courage to say, like, nah. Now, you know, and I'm talking to the people that listen to us. We should have learned a lesson from that handkerchief head that was in there for 8 years. Now they want to push his wife out there. And I'm starting to hear those so-called sorority sisters and all this other garbage saying, if they do that, then we got to support them. We got to support Michelle. Come on, man. We got to grow up, brother. So, You know, those childish things that I see, and we had some of these people in leadership right in that grassroots group that I met you in pushing for that same party when they saw the disrespect that they gave us. Well, I don't even know if they saw it. Maybe they... Because if they saw it, then maybe they, you know, I don't know, man. But, you know, I'm glad you're on, brother. And I know I responded to your emails yesterday because I get tired of it sometimes. You know what I mean? And I guess that's a character flaw on me when, you know, I hear about Joy Reid and Melissa Harris Perry and Al Sharpton. And my thing to that is, I go back to Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes. If you don't know me by now, you'll never know me. And so we keep, I can't say we, I'm going to say they keep falling for the okie doke. Because the last time I went to vote, because I want to, you know, I want to serve on jury trials and everything, because I believe that's the one thing that I do benefit from by voting is to get on one of these jury trials and to make sure my voice is heard. But other than that, I don't see, you know, we had an elder up here, Brother Robert Gray. He said, we didn't vote our way into this mess and we can't vote our way out of it. So, you know, I mean, no truer words were said, and I got to hold on to that because we're not going to vote our way. Both parties have let us know that they want us as a, as, you know, they need us to step on, to blame things on when things go wrong. You know, right now I heard there's some things in the white supremacist world, and I don't even like using that. I say white, white demonic world. Those ones that got the hatred, you can see the hatred right on their faces. Those demons. They want to blame black women for this clown being in office now, with the prices being raised. So they're looking at black women. They're looking at that guy in South Carolina, that puppet, that I don't even, and you know, the congressman or whatever he is, Clyburn. Down there, that I forget his name.
Clyburn. Mm-hmm.
I call him Clan Brown. Well, see, they're looking at all that now, and they're blaming black women for this guy being in there. When really, well, I don't think it was even black women. I just think it was the powers that be said, no, we got to get this guy out because he ain't completely playing ball, and we'll put this dude in. So, you know, this thing is all corrupt, and I got to go back to it again. We didn't vote ourselves into, but you are right. We have to organize. We have to organize. Organization is the key here. If we can organize, I don't care if it's 5% of us that can organize. If it could be 5% of us that can organize, get arrogance, egos, Albert Pike, religion out the way, and just say, like, we got to have a common good for our people, and this is the direction we got to go in, I think we got it made, man. If we can just get 5%, 3%, I don't care, 3%. You know, you start small, you build big. And then maybe some of the younger people see us acting like adults and then start respecting us and our wisdom. Because right now, they're looking at us like, y'all telling us to get out and vote like our lives depend on it. We do it, and the same thing happens. So we've been lying to them. You know what I mean? We've been lying to them. So... You know, Brother Wes, it's a pleasure hearing you, brother. I just had to call in, man, and tell you, I respect you, brother. You know what I mean? Because I know where your heart is at. But just looking at the condition of our people as a whole, it's just heartbreaking. But I got to have faith. I know I got to have faith. I heard the brother come on after me a couple of weeks ago, and he said, we all got to start somewhere, but I'm waiting for it to start. I'm waiting for it to start. So,
well,
you know,
you'll probably be the one to start it, my brother. You'll probably be the one to start it. But, and thank you very much. I mean, yes, I was a part of that organization that you talked about. And from where I sit and from what I've seen, they had to get rid of us as an organization because they wanted to bring Trump in. And had we done what we were supposed to have done, there's no way that Trump would have been there. And then there's no way that we would continue to fall for the same old okey-doke over and over and over again. So that's why they had to do what they did to make sure that we never got to first base. Period. And it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate because we have so many of the people that we believe in and think that they're going to do what they say they're going to do, only to lead us to the water's edge and then try to drown us.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what they attempted to do, but we got to keep, like Jesse Jackson said, we got to keep hope alive. You know what I mean? That's one thing that I do agree with him on. So, all right, my brothers, I just had to call in. And, you know,
it was a pleasure talking to you, my brother. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks for your contribution.
All right, take care, everybody.
All right. Let's go to 215. 215.
Yeah, good evening, Brother Elliot. Elliot, I do apologize, Elliot. I had to take a call on my other phone in the other room and stuff, man. How you doing, Brother Elliot?
Great.
Hey, Brother Richard. How you doing, Brother Wes? How you doing, good brother?
I'm doing fine. How are you, my brother?
I'm doing fine. Our praise be to Allah. You know, Brother Wes, you know, I want to first give credit to my good friend, Brother James Woodson, who's showing a regular basis. When Elliot first came on, he was reading the Post report. I think it was about the Nazi and white supremacist influence in Ukraine government. But Brother James Woodson first mentioned that to me about a week ago about how they was full of Nazis and white racists in that Ukraine government, who, by the way, have no love for black people. And as a matter of fact, the front of the car even got a thing about it in the current issue of the front of the car about these white racists, they have no love for black people over there, which is apropos and stuff. When you got these black elected officials, Brother West, that's talking about some we lock, stock, and barrel. And with these white race, and again, not saying all white race people, all Ukrainians are white bigots. I'm not saying at all, but you know, a large segment of them are. We see how they treated our people, you know, trying to get on trains to get out of Ukraine in this war-torn country right now. So, but the head of Negroes just sitting there supporting a bunch of white racists who they know have no love for their people is very, very disheartening and stuff. But again, like you said, Brother West, you said it best, you know, on the city, state, and federal level, because I always tell Elliot Richard all the time that as long as we as black people, and I know a lot of us from our political not knowing any better, but we have to get more educated, because as long as we keep voting for these Negroes on the city, state, and federal level, Brother West, we're going to keep getting what we get. You know, the definition of insanity is to keep doing the same thing over and over again and expect a different result. As long as you keep voting for these individuals, be they male or female, And just because they black and stuff, and only black and skin color only, but as long as they get that white supremacist mindset, we're going to continue, our schools going to continue to go unfunded in the hood, in the ghetto, if you will. We're going to continue to get nothing at the state level, and we damn sure ain't going to get nothing at the federal level but misery and scorn. As long as we keep voting for these same kind of individuals over and over again. It's just, to me, a blind man can see this, you know?
Yeah, I agree. So, I agree with you, my brother. I would say this though, you know, this is the time to organize for a power move, and mm-hmm. that power move is for the fall election is to boycott that bad boy, mm-hmm. so that the Democrats can know how powerful black people really are.
Yes.
And if black people stay away from the polls, you realize that the Congress and the Senate, probably they're going to lose. And I know I hear a lot of good Negroes want to tell me about, well, if they do, what happens? Well, it doesn't really matter. I don't care who it is, the donkey or the elephant. We still get kicked in the butt.
Yes, we do, Brother West. Yes, we do. Lord knows we do. We catch that, whether it's Reagan in there, Bush, Clinton. It don't matter which one of them devils in there. We still catch that. Even when people like Obama's in there, we catch hell. So you're right. It makes no difference, man. But, you know, Brother West, I'll say these last things and go. I'm a Muslim. I'm a member of the Nation of Islam. And for clear, you know, I want to be open and clear. Yesterday I was in a suburb of Philadelphia, Springfield, PA, right outside of Philly, and I'm a dues paying member for CARES, the Council on American Islamic Relations. And our keynote speaker was Brother Imam Soleimani, and this thing was packed to the rafters for a post-pandemic, Brother West. It was, the whole hall was packed, at least close to 2,000 people. They served a nice dinner yesterday, and we had Muslims from different backgrounds, from Africa, Iran, Libya, Iraq, places like that. But long story short, our keynote speaker, Imam, who happened to be, I think this brother's from Morocco, if I remember correctly. Well, anyway, he was saying about how, he said, I feel the pain of my black brothers and sisters, because he's our keynote speaker. He said, even though I'm from Morocco, he said, I see the hypocrisy and the white racism and how they play people of color, especially black people like Chubbs. He said every black person should have been offended back here. Two things, he brought up two good examples, Brother West. He said back when Biden was vice president, And I think Obama's running for a second term against Mitt Romney, and Obama made the comment to the black caucus and stuff, and some of them Negroes had none of them had enough damn heart and integrity to correct that devil. He got right up there and said, "Yeah, y'all better vote for me and Barack, because you vote for the Republicans, they gonna have y'all back in chains, y'all." You know, insulting. I mean, that's just an ignorant statement, and these Negroes didn't say a word. Now, if it had been Trump or one of them said that, and from the Republican Party, the Negroes would have had a fit. You would never hear Biden say it to a group of white Jews, saying, "If you don't vote for us, them Nazis are going to have you back in heaven." He would never, because he would know for the kind of backlash you would get. If he felt comfortable saying something like that. And then, of course, Brother West, in his recent run for president, when he told the brother, "Shamala the God, you know, you don't vote for me, you ain't black." Again, insulting, you know what I mean? See, and this is the kind of thing that these white bigots like Biden, they feel comfortable insulting black people, and we sit there and take it. And you know, these black elected officials have enough heart to sit there and call them out on this. And this is why people keep going through the okie doke, because we keep on supporting, like Malcolm said on the tape, you put the Democrats first, and they put you last. And that's why it goes back to Brother West, which is we have to organize and continue to put pressure and make these Negroes uncomfortable, make the white media uncomfortable, where they can't keep ignoring our story. We got to make sure we put it out there, like the saying go, make them hear you. And we got to keep doing it, like Malcolm said, by any means necessary, make them hear you. We can't keep going for this okie doke, man, because like you said, Brother West, when you got these black elected officials like Gregory Meeks can get right up there and talk to you with Ukraine just this past to the border of Poland and talk all the stuff about these Ukrainians, how he felt the pain, he couldn't sleep at nighttime. Well, Negro, did you sleep at nighttime when they were dropping bombs all through Africa, the United States, killing black African men, women, and children, when they go through Iraq and Libya and Palestine, killing the Zionist Israel's we doing? Do you sleep at night? I never heard you say you couldn't sleep at nighttime because some white folks getting killed. All of a sudden, this Negro, he can't sleep at night. I mean, give me a break, man. Give me a break. But like I said, Brother West, I'm not going to take up too much more of your time. I just wanted to join Brother Ralph and saying it's an honor. And I love your spirit. I love the love you have for our people, Brother Weston. And Elliot, I hope Elliot put me on mute and I'll listen to the rest of the show. But Brother West, you keep doing what you're doing, brother. And may I continue to bless you with good health and good spirit and keep that fighting drive in you, good brother.
Assalamu alaikum, my brother. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Brother West?
Yes.
Before we wind things down, talk a little bit about the. You still doing the program, ain't you?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, because I know that things have been a little curtailed because of the
pandemic.
You know, yeah,
so,
the pandemic.
Yeah, they shut us down for a while, but we're back. We've been back for a good while now. So yeah, we're every Wednesday live from New Orleans. So we do what we do.
I'm going to be in touch with you too, because there's some things happening, you know, that they're going to do a observance of the 72 convention. So, in fact, we're probably going to have one of the organizers on within the next couple of weeks. You know, the one in 72, they not only had some of the black elected officials, which it was no comparison to what they have now, but you had black elected officials there then. You had grassroots, you had gang members. Everybody was represented there. So, and the reason I'm saying that is because I know that you have this political formations down there. I know the Black Coffee Party was functioning at one time. I don't know whether they still are, but I'll be in touch with you to kind of get a little lead on some of the folks down there, maybe have them on and encourage them to be a part of what's going on if they don't already know.
All right. I'd be happy to involve and get it, you know, get it organized here as well.
Sounds good. Brother West, before you go, give us, you know, the leads on the program, how the listening audience can hear it. And plus, one of the callers wanted the commentary that you gave. He wanted to know how he could get it. Go ahead.
Either have him give me a call or email me. My number is 504 251
504-251-2201. That's, again, it's 504-251-2201. If he gives me a call, or he can email me at the wcjohnson76@yahoo.com. I can, you know, just answer him back with the commentary. That's not a problem.
Good. Before we go, a call popped up. Maybe let's see whether they're 215. Are you there? 215. Let's put them back on hold. Brother Wes, give out the how folks can hear the program, things of that nature, and anything you want to say before you go.
I appreciate it. Around the country, they can go to W.C. Johnson YouTube channel and pick it up there. It's either Our Story or W.C. Johnson on YouTube, and they can pick it there.
Good. And, you know, Brother West, we're going to always be in touch with you when we want to tap into some your perspectives, whether we want to talk about some of these political formations, which is coming. In fact, they're already here. You might be pleasantly surprised at some of the things you might hear within the next couple of months on the program. So, and
I'm always looking for pleasant surprises.
That's what you're talking about.
Oh, I'll be talking with you soon.
I'll be looking forward to it. And Richard, it's good hearing and talking to you again.
Same here, Brother West. Same here.
Yes, indeed.
Talk to you later.
Thank you, my brother. Stay strong. Stay black.
All right. Richard.
Yes, sir.
It was good hearing from a veteran organizer out there and somebody that's still on the battlefield working. Giving us some insights and perspectives on things that that we should be focusing in on. You know, it's just good hearing from the men. You know, you find some of the men now in different areas, and you're aware of them too. They kind of want to take the back seat, figure as though that they've done the work. They're tired. Some of the men get a little fatigued. But it's always refreshing to hear men of any age that are still out there fighting, developing new strategies, and continuing on the battlefield because they need it.
Yes, yes, yes. It is. It is that, and I'm. You know, it. What people don't realize, this work does prolong your life. Because, you know, I want to say, because it's a work of passion and love for our people, which means that we're always rejuvenating as long as our people is not really trying to be energy vultures. And those of us who are looking out for the liberation of our people, to be organized our people so that we can be self-sufficient. That is more about synergy than about energy zapping. So those men and women provide the experience based off of their longevity of life, which is really critical for us to be able to move forward in this political. I'm hearing that dialogue in one of the clips you play in this political contest we're in. That isn't just, you know, some kind of pageantry. It's a life and death contest, even though it doesn't seem like that because of what the media portrays life and death is supposed to be about.
Richard, before we go this evening, I just wanted to, say something on it and get your perspective on it. If not, we can just... and things or wind things down. You know, earlier this week, if I'm not mistaken, the beginning of the week, the House passed the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act.
Yeah.
And it was something that, what's his name out of Illinois? His name, it just blew right out of my head.
Man, who's this? First name Rush, but his first name Benjamin Rush. I mean,
Bobby Rush, I'm sorry. That they had been pushing for. But I think over the years, since some of our elders have been pushing for this, over 200 times this thing has come up and been defeated. And now it passed. Now, Richard, I just wanted to get your perspective. When some of our elders at the turn of the century, 1900, was pushing for this, it was because our people are being murdered wholesale by the average John Q. public that was white, could snatch one of our people up, man, woman, or child, and lynch them, hang them, shoot them, tar and feather them, throw them in the river with cinder blocks on them, whatever. They could do it, and they wouldn't, it would be no retribution. They wouldn't get sentenced. They wouldn't get charged. And our people were pushing for this as some type of legal protection. Times are different now in the respective as John Q. public can't necessarily get away with that as they did at that time. The police department kind of took that banner where they do it. Now, the black leadership don't want to do anything to regulate police behavior. That's clear. So they passed this law, or pushed for this law to be passed. But I do notice something. One of the reasons why the law was passed. Do you notice why, Richard? Did you pick up on that? I ain't lose you, did I, Richard?
No, I didn't know I had the mic on. No, I didn't. I didn't hear it.
Well, it was the same thing with the Civil Rights Act of 1964, Civil Rights Bill of 1964. We know the sacrifices some of our people made to even get that done. People lost their lives. We know what it took to get that done, or what some of our ancestors sacrificed to get that done. And you see what that Equality Act did. It kind of superseded or amended that Civil Rights Act, where that was attached to something that our people fought for. Well, it was the same thing with this, with the Emmett Till anti-lynching bill that was passed, where they attach somebody's lifestyle to this bill. And that's why it was passed. If that wasn't in there or attached, that bill still wouldn't have passed. These white folks still wouldn't have passed it. But let me just read this here. It was Act H.R. 155 of the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act. And it's attached to hate crime bill, the section 249. It's attached to that. Now let me read the attachment 249. If I could find it here. This is 249, section 18. Offenses involving actual or perceived race, color, religion, or national origin, whoever, whether or not acting under color of law, willfully causing bodily harm to any person through the use of a firearm, a fire, dangerous weapon, or an explosive or an incendiary device, attempts to cause bodily injury to any person because of perceived race, color, religion, national origin. And then it talks about the penalties for that. But the other attachment, attachment two that goes along with that under the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act is this. offenses involving actual or perceived religion, national origin, gender, sexual orientation, gender identity. You know, that's why it passed, Richard.
Makes sense.
Now,
makes sense.
But this is what I'm talking about, leadership. You know, when you're in leadership of an organization, a club, a group of people, if I'm doing something, Richard, then if I'm a good leader, then I come back and talk to the membership. I talk to the people I represent. See their feelings on this. Because I'm only supposed to be doing what you want me to do. And maybe I got it twisted. I'm not supposed to be acting on my own or acting in the benefits of a party. You're supposed to represent the people of the community that put you there. So when you don't come back and talk to the people about this, Emmett Till wasn't gay. He wasn't down there looking to sleep with no boys or grown men or whatever. He wasn't gay. He wasn't homosexual. He wasn't transgender. He was a young black boy that was lynched by some animals. I mean, what the hell? Listen, if the people want to do this type of behavior, which stems out of European behavior, because this type of stuff was never anything that was accepted by any black cultures. It wasn't. But it was totally accepted by white cultures. All you got to do is look at history. You'll see it clearly. So why? But the thing is, why does this have to be attached to something that represents our people or that is horrible happened to our people? If those people got a lot of money, it's a lot of funding, a lot of powerful people behind it, lobby for your own bill. Don't attach stuff to black folks. But that's done for a reason, Richard. It's clearly done for a reason. It's a strategy.
I agree.
Something gay is attached to the 64 Civil Rights Bill. Now something's gay attached to this, the Emmett Till anti-lynching bill. And black politicians is claiming victory, but don't tell the people exactly what's attached to this bill. I'm just throwing that out there because when I seen that, I mean, that type of stuff, that just rubs me the wrong way. And you know, on Thursday, Biden was here in Philadelphia, and they met with the leadership, and I guess anybody, rank and file or whatever, of the Democratic Party. They were getting their marching orders for this midterm elections. So whatever their marching orders was from Biden and his intelligentsia, you can best believe they're not coming back and telling you. And you're supposed to be the one they represent. Now, he done already told them publicly that he didn't want them talking about the police anymore. Whatever else he done told them. Don't talk about, he might be telling them, don't talk about reparations. Who knows? Because they don't come back and tell you anything.
But yes, I agree.
I'm sorry. I just thought that was kind of stand out there. You know, all this time, they've been fighting to get that passed, and all of a sudden it passed. So, you know, you can always smell a rat when you're dealing with Europeans. That's the way they roll. That's a fact. People can like it, dislike it, take it, lump it, whatever. If they're doing something, it's always some type of shenanigans, sleight of hands, get the one up. That's what they are. That's how they roll. So I know when that passed, it had to be something funny going on. And then when you look at it, you see what's funny about it. Just wanted to throw that out there. You know, before we end things tonight, let me talk about the lineup on Time for an Awakening Media, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. African Perspectives with Brother Oshi. Always interesting dialogue and topics on African Perspectives. That's Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I know one of the callers said that they was a little thrown off by the time. Later on Monday evenings, Black Therapy Central with host Dr. Weir Kamban and Dr. Kamal Kamban, and hopefully any day now they'll be back on. So I'm saving that spot for 9 to 10 conversation reparations and COBS program the first and third Mondays of the month. On Tuesday, 8 to 10 p.m. Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers. On Wednesday, it's our time, the Black Farmers Program, West Georgia Cooperative, and from 9 to 10, the Black Agenda Report with Dr. David Muhammad. On Fridays, Time for an Awakening is back from 8 until then. On Saturdays, from 7 to 9, the Elders of Sankofa with host Brother Alfonso Watkins. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children.
To save the children.